And to clarify, Pacific Underground airs on the fourth Friday on KBOO Portland. Yes, 9:59 a.m. And coming up at 10, well, I believe we're going to hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints is not available, so we'll hear Letters to Washington featuring an interview with Paul Pearson, author of the book American Amnesia. At 11, The Digital Divide is taking the month off, and we'll hear Facing Climate Change, a documentary about climate change and its effects in the Skagit Valley. And a big thank you to all the members of the KBOO Foundation for all of your generous support. If you listening right now, are not currently a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can remedy that oversight at kboo.fm. Click on the word donate. Although we know better, don't we? It's not a donation, it's an investment in the kind of community-centered, community-focused, community-produced media that serves your needs rather than serve you up to corporate advertisers. Yes, indeed. That's all coming up this morning, leading up to a great afternoon of music, an early evening of news and public affairs, and more music to take you overnight and through the weekend. But first, this.
Come over here, to the right-hand speaker.
KBOO's book and record sale is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon. Find treasures amongst the stacks of donated items while raising money for KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Friction between the stylus and the record produces a force which makes the arm try to swing towards the record center.
Again, that's KBOO's book and record sale, Saturday, August 13th from noon to 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm now standing in the center, and my voice should be located precisely midway between the speakers.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, August 12th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on the air, kboo.fm on the web. Cascadia, we are going to be sacred stone camping again today with Billy Wilson. There's much more to talk about. History is the past is not the past. In fact, it's not even the present. It is the present. It's right now, and unless we have an eye to it, it could be the future as well. Indigenous justice is it is worlds away from the U.S. justice system, which has shown itself to be an utter and complete failure for those it was created primarily to protect. Our justice system is now yet another weapon of oppression. It is a weaponized judicial system, and it is used to keep the downtrodden exactly that way. So that said, we've got Billy Wilson coming up. There's, of course, the Humpapa Lakota Sioux. He's from the Sitting Bull Clan. He's going to be joining us again today on the road back to the Dakotas, joining his brothers and sisters on the front line at Sacred Stone Camp, defending their land, defending their heritage, defending their culture against the Dakota Access Pipeline, which I'm almost certain very few people have heard about. This has been, they've carefully kept the lid on this one. We were ever to have the kind of coverage that the Keystone XL enjoyed, then this would be, as I said, a different story. Every story, of course, is different. So that said, we are going to forego the weather today. It's going to be hot and sunny today. It should get up to 92. There's heat advisory in place. And do not forget, we got that meteor shower that's coming up. And I should have some notes on that for you in just a minute. Of course, the news this week locally is that the standoff, we got a whole new form of performance going on. The standoff comedy king Ryan Bundy's confrontation with sheriff's deputies at a Portland jail, apparently, it says, came from his fear that a bullet lodged in his shoulder would be surgically removed. Wait for it. Without his consent. That's right. He wants to keep his bullet, the poor Matt. And that is according to his brother Eamon in a recorded message posted to the Bundy Ranch Facebook. How did these guys get to do all of this Facebook stuff? And they're also stumbling around going in and out of each other's cells. If I don't know you and you want to post to my Facebook page, please be sure it's a picture of a bullet and not your most recent baby. That's all I have to say on that. Eamon said that he was awakened early on Tuesday by his brother pounding on his cell door, saying that U.S. Marshals were trying to take his bullet away. That's major news this week, as well as a gigantic IKEA-like warehouse for people who lack other options in housing. Makes it plain and clear as day why someone might choose to live in a camp. We're waiting to get, we're going to have Billy Wilson on in just a few moments. There are some really disturbingly hawkish foreign policy planks in the Democratic Party platform late next week. Just a little preview there. Stephen Zunis is going to be joining us. We don't have a great deal of foreign news, except for the fact that Russia is attempting to beat up the Ukraine, maybe thinking that possibly Trump might come to his aid there and encourage American college students to hack into the Ukrainian Defense Department's site and get all the codes that are stashed there. Shouldn't take much time. I don't know whether they have much in the way of codes there behind closed doors. The Reporters Committee to Track Interference with News Media on the campaign trail in response to a disturbing number of clashes and threats on the subject of hacks. Violence against news media during the presidential primaries. The Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press has launched a service to track and at times respond to interference with news gathering during this fall's campaign. Don't forget, it's now less than 100 days until election day. Less than 100 days. Advice? Well, I hate to say it, vote for Hillary and then lie. Tell your friends whatever they want to hear from you. We've got Dallas Goldtooth on the line from the Dakotas. Dallas, of course, is of a leader there of First Nations resistance to the aggression on the part of the U.S. and the efforts to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline, which again is a story that really hasn't been being told. Good morning, Dallas. We're very, very glad that you could join us today.
Good morning, Chris. I hope you're doing well today.
We are, and we want to hear news from the Dakotas. Billy Wilson showed me some great videos. We want to try to put those up on the website and give people a notion. I find the land there stunningly beautiful, absolutely beautiful. The desecration right now, what we understood a few months ago was that the permit to put this pipeline through had been, the permit had been rescinded, and now it's back in place. Can you tell us how that happened?
Yeah, the permit that you talked about, what happened was, that was just for, that was under the Fish and Wildlife Service lands that were specifically in Iowa. So, and you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service has lands there. The pipeline's going to cross through it, so they have to get permission from Fish and Wildlife. And they initially had granted the permit, and then after some folks had made note that, hey, this is going to affect some cultural historical sites, they rescinded it and went through a whole process of trying to remediate the issue. And after that, after a while, the government said, well, you know, we're not going to hurt these cultural and historical sites that bad. So they turned around and reapproved it. The Dakota Access Pipeline, for most folks don't know, is it's about 1,200 miles long that starts in the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota and goes to southeast Iowa and a place called Patoka, Illinois, which is a refinery hub. And it's going to transport, proposed to transport over 400,000 barrels per day of crude oil across the heartland of America. It crosses the Missouri River twice. You know, it impacts a lot of potentially, could potentially have a significant disaster on drinking water for thousands and thousands of people. And it also, the whole process of them putting, kind of get this permit, this pipeline approved, totally disregarded indigenous rights of Lakota and Dakota people, and totally disregarded the right for consent and consultation about how this pipeline will affect the drinking water, will affect the cultural sites, sacred sites of Dakota and Lakota people.
As in, and what about treaties? Are treaties violated in the course of drilling the pipeline through?
Yeah, there is issue. Like, you have the Fort Laramie Treaty. There are treaties that guaranteed not only access for hunting and fishing, but also access to water. There is some major legal precedents as far as the relationship between tribes and the responsibility for the federal government to ensure that tribes are consulted, that are just been totally blown out of the water, just totally stepped around by the Corps of Engineers. And that's the main antagonist in this issue, is the United States Army Corps of Engineers. They're the ones that kind of held the final permit. The pipeline got all their permits except the Corps of Engineers. That was a critical one, because the Corps of Engineers is the one that allows the pipeline to cross the Missouri River, to cross significant waterways, and cross the Ogallala Aquifer. So, you know, and a lot of us folks, if you study relatively recent history of Native American people in the United States, you understand that the Corps of Engineers has been a bad guy for a lot of people for countless times now. You look at the Missouri River alone, all the dams that they put in place, you know, that was the Corps of Engineers that flooded thousands of our villages, you know, and flooded our sacred sites for the benefit of a mega hydro dam.
Well, how did the Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service get their meat hooks into this project?
Well, it's just that there's a handful of lands that are like basically wildlife refuge lands from in South Dakota, Iowa, along the way. And so those are lands that they're responsible to look over, to monitor, to take care of, to manage. And so the pipeline, the proposed route goes through some of those lands. And the pipeline is Dakota Access Pipeline, the company that owns it. It's the parent company is a company called Energy Transfer Partners. They're a new company, relatively like the new kids on the block, but they are becoming one of the largest pipeline oil companies in this country. And they're under the radar. No one knows about them. People know about TransCanada. They know about Enbridge. But Energy Transfer is based out of Texas and Oklahoma, are the new ones on the block. And they have a history of just disregarding the local resistance, local opposition, and just ramming these projects through the land as quick as possible. They've done it in the East Coast. They're doing it through Pennsylvania, Virginia pipelines over there, and now they're trying to do it with Dakota Access.
So I guess the next step, we're getting close to being over time. I would like very much to have you back on the program soon. I want to talk about the options going forward. That is something that we want to look at here, and I know that listeners, now that we know, people will be following this and standing in solidarity with you, the Lakota Dakota people, who indeed deserve the support that we are able to offer. So thank you so much. My guest has been Dallas Goldtooth, the Keep It in the Ground campaign organizer for the Indigenous. This is an important issue. This is